A note for our listeners before we get started this week. This episode was recorded on May 19th, weeks before the recent tragedy in Orlando. Late in this episode, our guest, John Schwabisch, discusses how visualization can affect public policy using the example of gun violence. As this was recorded before the horrific events in Orlando, please take that into consideration as you listen.
Hi, welcome to episode 6 of Data Points. I'm your co-host, Sharon Paley.
And I'm Eric Reese. Very excited to talk today with John Schwabisch, who is a senior research associate at the Urban Institute. John is a great thinker in the area of data visualization, which is one of the key things that we work on at GovX, and we're really excited to talk to him. He has a PhD in economics from Syracuse University and has deep research experience in the areas of income and public policy, through his experience at the Congressional Budget Office, as well as working on a variety of areas of public policy. He also is in charge of running Making the Policy Viz website and has a new book out called Better Presentations, a guide for scholars, researchers, and wonks. So you can find John everywhere. He's the man, and we're really excited to talk to him today.
He's also the host of his own podcast, which these two co-hosts have previously been on. So thanks for joining us and sort of paying it back, John. We appreciate you being here.
Yeah, thanks a lot. And thanks for that great introduction. Glad to be here.
So, John, I'm going to kick us off. So in my eyes, you are a data visualization guru. So I wanted to start with why visualization and what got you interested in this topic?
So I started my career, as you mentioned, at the Congressional Budget Office. I was working for a long time on Social Security reform and immigration reform and food stamps and lots of other topics. And one thing that sort of became clear to me when I was at CBO was that we didn't seem to be doing a great job communicating to our audience. And CBO's audience is really well-defined, right? It's members of Congress and their staffs. And what became clear to me was that the places like Urban Institute and Brookings and AEI and the Heritages, those places of the world, seem to be getting their message out in better ways than we at CBO were doing. So I started thinking about how we could do a better job of communicating our data and communicating our analysis and communicating our scores of our different budget estimates. And so I started thinking about how we could improve our visualizations. And I sort of stumbled upon this world of data visualization where there were people actually thinking very carefully about creating graphs and visuals, not just because your report should have a graph, but because that graph is going to be viewed by a lot of people. Probably more people will view the graph in the PDF report than are actually going to read the text. And so I started thinking really carefully about how we as an agency were communicating visually. And I started creating different types of graphs and infographics and other types of things, and tried to, you know, just work together with some of the great colleagues there to change the way we're communicating. And I started a blog, as you mentioned, Policy Viz, where I started talking about the different types of visualizations that I thought worked and didn't work, and got really engaged in the community. And a couple of years ago, I moved over here to the Urban Institute, where I continue my research agenda, but I also am working with the communications department here and researchers here on the same sorts of things of creating visualizations that do a good job of communicating content and bringing people to the site and engaging them in visual in different ways.
So we see that there's a lot of data visualization out there in the market today, but sometimes it's not maybe the right way to visualize the set of data that you're trying to get people to understand. So how can you help people make decisions about what the right format is for any given data visualization?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's kind of part of the whole crux of the challenge with visualizing data, because there's not a one-to-one sort of correspondence between some data and some specific graph type. So I may have time series data, and I could graph those data as a line chart, and I could graph those data as a column chart. So there's lots of different ways. I could have part-to-whole data, and I could show that as a pie chart, though I would recommend against it in the most cases. Or I could show that as a stacked column chart or as a tree map. So there's lots of different ways to present data, and that's one of the core challenges. But stepping back a little bit from sort of do I make a line chart or a column chart, what I try to encourage people to do is to think very carefully about their audience. So let's just take one sort of spectrum of visualization types as an example. So you can create a static chart, which is, you know, it's not active, it's not moving. So make it in Excel, print it out as an image file and share it. So that's one type. Then we have an interactive visualization sort of on the other end of the spectrum. So this might be created in something like D3 in JavaScript, maybe even in a Tableau or high charts or, you know, all these, there's lots of different tools you can use to create interactive visualizations. And in those visualizations, there's sort of an exchange of information. The user is doing something, they're clicking or they're swiping or they're drilling down or something. And then the interactive visualization is giving them something back, some sort of insight. So those are two very different types of visualizations. Now, when I was at CBO, we weren't really that engaged and interested in creating interactive visualizations because we didn't feel, at the time, at least when I was there, we didn't feel that members of Congress were going to be clicking around in some sort of interactive visualization, that's not what that audience needed. What that audience needed was the headline fact, the bottom line story, the statistic that they were going to be able to get quickly and easily so that they could communicate that number quickly and easily to their audience or to their staffs or to their colleagues or whomever. So I think it's in some ways it's a little less about like what's the right chart, what's the right graph, and it's more about who is your audience and what sort of graphic style or type are they going to use and how are they going to use that. So that's sort of the first step. And then it starts thinking about, okay, what specific graph type is going to work for this particular chart. And the other thing that happens, I think, is people, they settle on a chart type and they end up putting everything on the chart. They say, oh, I've got 6 lines. I'm going to put all 6 lines on the chart. They're oftentimes going to be the 6 standard colors in Excel or R or whatever the default is in their tool. And they sort of go on their merry way. And that's not always the greatest way to approach a graph that's going to communicate information. One strategy that I really like that a woman, Cole Nussbaumer-Naflick, writes about in her great book, Storytelling with Data, is to start everything with gray. Make all those 6 lines gray and then say, okay, for this graph, for this audience, for this story, I want to highlight these 2 lines and I'll make those lines, you know, a different color and make those stand out. So again, it always sort of comes back. We always start with who our audience is and then it comes back as we design to who is our audience and what do they need.
That's a great tip.
Yeah, that's great advice both for us and for cities we work with and everyone, because I think keeping the audience in mind is something we often don't do as well as we should and almost always don't do explicitly. So I think that's a great tip. And I'm curious, you mentioned a couple tools there, John, like Tableau, R, D3. What are the main tools that you are using in your visualization work?
Well, actually, for most of the work that I do, and again, most of the visualizations that I personally create are going to be static. The visualizations I create are usually made in nothing more complicated than Excel. I think Excel is a great tool for lots of different reasons, but I think a lot of people don't realize that they can extend the capabilities of the tool pretty substantially, and it really doesn't take all that much effort just to sort of learn some of the tricks and the shortcuts. And some of the different strategies to do so. But there are lots of other tools that I and others, of course, play around with. So I code a little bit in R. I use statistical packages for the statistical work in Stata and SAS. You know, we have a large team here, probably not as large as some would like, but we have a great team here. And most of the tools we're using for some of the interactive visualizations are things like JavaScript and D3. We use Mapbox for our mapping capabilities. Some of the researchers here will use things like Tableau for some of the sort of interactive exploratory work, and also tools like Power BI, which is a new interactive dashboarding tool from Microsoft. I'm also a big fan of some of these other, I'd call them newer tools that allow you to create interactive visualizations. They're more drop and drag. They generally sit on a JavaScript platform, so you don't necessarily need a ton of coding experience. So tools like high charts and Quadrigram, tools like Lyra and Trifacta out of the University of Washington. There's just sort of a bevy of tools right now out there to create visualizations. But I think for probably, you know, most people, all they really need to do is create a static graph in Excel and, you know, get that chart well annotated, with the right design, with the right annotation and color, so that it tells the story that they want it to tell. But some of these other tools, like I mentioned, HiCharts, Plotly is another one. That's sort of what I consider kind of baby steps into JavaScript. So if you or your audience or firm are not JavaScript programmers and you need something where, you know, say it's going to be a simple column chart, you want to have some interactivity with it, those sorts of tools can be really useful because they don't necessarily require a ton of coding experience.
Yeah, I think it's probably heartening to a lot of our audience that you work a lot of the time in Excel, because we know from our work with government that that's very often, sometimes maybe the only tool in the box, and certainly the most readily available tool in the box. So, but for people who are really getting started, is that where you would recommend that they start with data visualization? And how can you best learn to use Excel for creating more than just spreadsheets?
Again, I have no problem with using Excel. I mean, I really sort of fight back against the Excel haters out there who say, oh, you know, this is a terrible visualization because it was created in Excel. Excel actually doesn't create anything. PowerPoint doesn't give bad presentations. Excel doesn't make bad data visualizations. It's the users that make things. So now, that's not to say that there are, you know, there's a lot of graph types in Excel that I would just love to black out, like 3D cones. You know, there's no need for 3D cones, right? Like, there's a lot of stuff I would probably get rid of. But there's a lot of other things that you can do with Excel. I have a lot of tutorials on my website. And I spend a lot of time teaching people how to create, say, a dot plot in Excel, or a tree map in Excel. Or I have lately sort of gotten into figuring out how to create tile grid maps in Excel, which is basically, it's a map of the United States, except the shapes of the states, they're not the actual state, they're squares, they're square cells. And so these have gotten fairly popular lately for a variety of different reasons. One reason is that every state gets the same shape, the same emphasis on the page or the screen. So if you look at sort of a standard map, Texas and California look really big, even though the important story in the data may be in Rhode Island or in Connecticut, which are relatively smaller shapes. But when you sort of give everything the same weight, you sort of equalize the perspective. I have a number of articles I've been writing lately on how to create both static tile grid maps, interactive tile grid maps that have column charts or lines within each state. So I think Excel is a great starting point, especially for people who are familiar with it. Everybody has it. Everybody knows how to use it. And then it's just a matter of understanding how to extend it. What are the capabilities that you can do with Excel to extend the types of graphs that you can make? And then from there, it's to move into other tools. I would say for me, and probably for many people who are primarily concerned with creating static graphs that maybe do a better job communicating the story, it would be more of design tools that I think are going to be most valuable. So things like Adobe Illustrator, Adobe InDesign. Because what you can do with those tools is you can bring the graph in that's made in Excel, and you could add text, and you could add annotation, you could add maybe some images or icons or things like that, that sort of change the style of the graph a little bit, allows you a little more control on where the annotation, where the text is going to sit on the graph. So those two things are great for statics. And of course, those are allowing you to use with, you know, maybe perhaps a limited style of data. Maybe not the largest, you know, definitely not like big data. Maybe not allowing you to sort of manipulate the data in the easiest way that you might like. So then if you're thinking that way, you start to move in sort of statistical packages. Package like R, for example, is an open source language, so it's free. It allows you to manipulate the data, allows you to create graphs sort of quickly and easily, but it requires you to learn some code. It requires you to learn that coding language, but allows you to sort of, once you get over that hump, allows you to create graphs quickly and easily, and allows you to sort of manipulate the data and do some statistical analysis. And then, of course, and then we get into the interactive world. For the most part now, we're talking about JavaScript, and particularly this library that, Eric, you mentioned, D3, which is the primary library people are using. It was developed by Mike Bostock at Stanford University at the time, and then was at the New York Times, and is now out on his own doing great things in development with that language. So, but I think, just to sort of circle back, I think for most people, it starts in Excel and expanding what you can do in Excel and then moving sort of on from there.
I think that's another great tip. And one thing I wanted to highlight today is, beyond visualization, you talked about communicating and storytelling more generally. How can folks learn to just communicate better, whether it's through visualization and you said some annotations or images. What are the things that folks can do to focus on to make sure they're communicating their whole story with their data?
So as you mentioned, as I've alluded to a couple of times, I'm a big fan of annotation. I'm also a big fan of more active headlines in my charts. So just thinking about your graph, you know, a graph that says the unemployment rate from 1940 to 2016, you know, that's fine. That's a factual statement. You're showing a line graph of that. But a line graph that says the unemployment rate over the last few months has been declining steadily declining, you know, that's, you know, that tells a story right away in the headline. And so you add some annotation to that graph and you move things ahead. I think, again, what it comes down to for most people is to think about the audience first. So when I work with people about their presentations, for example, I find, especially people who are working with data and doing research and doing analysis, I find that most people, they take that written report that they've been working on for a while and they just convert it into PowerPoint or a Keynote, whatever their tool is. And so they copy and paste figure one, they move table one and table two over to the slides, they take the text and they move it into bullet points. And all of that effort is just creating a slide version, a summary version of the written document. And that is not thinking about the audience. That is thinking about, that's the speaker thinking about the speaker. That's the speaker thinking about, what do I need, what do I want to make sure that I talk about in this presentation, when instead we as presenters, we as data visualizers, we as writers should be thinking about the reader or the audience or the user. So again, it comes back to the audience. You know, instead of putting up the six bullet points, each with, you know, a long sentence, because I as a speaker want to make sure I touch on all six things, maybe it should be one single slide with, you know, with an image or a graph, or it's, you know, three slides that break up those bullet points into different parts. And then I, as a speaker, if I practice more and I'm more familiar with my content in terms of speaking, which is a different form of communication than the written report, then I may not rely on the slides as much. Especially, this is especially problematic, I think, for people who are working with data and people who are doing analysis and research, that we think that every audience wants to know every detail, wants to see every data point. And really, for the most part, people want to know what your story is. They want to know what your point is. What's your bottom line? What do you want them to do with your presentation or with your report or with your graph? So it comes down to, you know, thinking about the audience, driving to that bottom line conclusion, and sort of simplifying, and not simplifying because people don't get it, but simplifying because you're bombarded with stuff all the time and we're trying to get to cut through all that and to get to that core of the idea of what's important. So I think for the folks that are listening to this podcast, working on city data, working to improve cities and how cities communicate their data and their analysis to other agencies or to the public or to the press, it's about thinking about those different groups and how those different groups can use that information in the easiest and the best way possible.
Is there like one great story or example, John, of how this form of communication using a really crisp, clear, concise, you know, sort of action-driven data visualization has been transformative to either public policy or just public understanding and the dialogue that falls out of that?
I mean, I can think of a few that have driven conversations. A lot of it's driven in the data visualization field, but I would say there's a great, somewhat now famous visualization from Periscopic, which is a design firm in Portland, that they created shortly after the Sandy Hook shooting, where they were looking at gun deaths in the United States. And it's a fairly different type of visualization type. And so if you can sort of imagine an arc for someone's life, starting at zero on the left side with their age going all the way out to along that horizontal line there out to 100, where these arcs start for each individual, you see this little, you know, when you get to this visualization, this line sort of appears and then you see a point where they are shot and killed. And then that line turns a different color and Periscopic is sort of filled in and how many years were lost for that particular life because they died from gun violence. And then that's repeated for you know, the hundreds of thousands of people who are affected by gun violence. You know, that is a very different visualization type than a column chart or a table or, you know, some other sort of standard chart type. And it uses animation and it also leads into sort of an interactive part. But that visualization type both has this animated element to it that allows you to see the story build. and allows you to interact with the visualization in a very different way. So I think that sort of visualization, there are lots of others that are sort of in that same vein, that in some ways present the data in a different way, but also sort of try to tap into the emotions of how people feel about this. This is a very, obviously, death from, gun deaths, gun violence is a very serious issue. So it had a very dark color scheme. It had a very sort of quiet approach to it in terms of the animation when you landed on the page. Those things lend themselves to helping an audience connect with the visualization, connect with the topic, and think about it perhaps in a very different way. So, I'm not sure that visualization changed policy. I'm not sure it affected a policy directly, but it certainly was highlighted. It certainly was talked about, I think, because it showed the data in a very different way and it tried to make the data personal, as opposed to saying a line chart that showed the number of gun deaths, how they've changed over time, for example. This showed individuals. This showed individual points for individuals who were shot and killed for each year. And that allows you to see, I think, and experience the data in a much different way.
This has been great, John. You have a gift for helping people understand something that is completely visual in an audio format. And so I just want to applaud your ability to do that, because it's really special. And we appreciate having you here on Data Points.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks again to John for joining us. If you want more info on data visualization, check out John's new book, Better Presentations, A Guide for Scholars, Researchers, and Wonks, and his website, policyviz.com. We'll include links to both in the show notes, so check them out to learn more about John's great work.
Now's the time for our weekly trivia question. Our upcoming guest is Tomasz Budowary, a professor here at Johns Hopkins University in the Department of Applied Mathematics. He is a researcher working on a project related to one of our What Works cities. So the question is, what is the city and the research topic that Dr. Budowary is focusing on? When you know the answer, send us an email at govx@jhu.edu. Or send us a message on Twitter at gov_ex by Friday, and we'll let you suggest a topic for a future episode.
That's it for this week. Thanks again for listening, and we hope you join us next week to find out where the data points.